CEU Medieval Radio, Past Perfect, the talk show about medieval and early modern culture.
Hello, welcome to Past Perfect, CEU Medieval Radio's podcast on everything medieval and early modern. My name is Tinatin Mirjanashvili and I'm here today with Levan Dadishvili. In the first part of the interview with Professor Levan, we talked about the origins of classical rhetoric and its importance in antiquity. He has already discussed the three parts of classical rhetoric, and today we will continue with the fourth and fifth parts, which are memoria and actio pronundiatio. Professor Levan, it is a pleasure to have you here again. Could you please tell us more about these two parts? How were they used in the art of rhetoric?
As I mentioned, or as we up to now considered more or less, first four parts of classical rhetoric, inventio, dispositio, elocutio, and memoria. So, concerning memoria again, Simonide from Chios was regarded the first who invented this art, or memorizing by visual association and by attaching the issue to certain place, which was then elaborated by Cicero, and even now it is called Ciceronian method, or method of place, location. The method implies that one must, for the whole life, depict in his imagination, mind, the road, and ascribe a certain number to each place. And while memorizing by visual association, must attach what must be memorized to a certain place. According to my experience and to my students, Tinatin also participated in this game. It's very pleasant play to memorize, for example, from the first attempt, 100 words in any foreign language, even that which one does not know at all. So our students from the first course memorize Latin and Greek texts, not knowing their meaning, because the meaning will come speedily. But the text which is heard and which is uttered still presents in the mind of a student. And this memorizing was very important. And as I mentioned, Rhodian or Pergamian school, rhetorical school, incorporated the art into the classical rhetoric. And the fifth part, the last fifth part, is rhetorical delivery, or as it was called in Latin, actio pronunciatio, however, in Greek, hypocrisis. Interesting to mention that hypocrisis meant, as in modern European languages, English as well, hypocrisy. But besides, it also implied rhetorical delivery as well as stage acting. And rhetorical delivery was so strongly associated with stage acting, particularly in tragedy, that almost it was regarded almost as one discipline. And many treatises from the modern period was composed for the both, for rhetorical delivery as well as stage acting, which implied at least three things: vox, voice, vultus, or countenance, and gestus or gesture, or other movement, depending on the tradition or rhetoric. Some accentuated movement component, some static component. And besides these three parts, very important was also emotion. Since Aristotle, although he did not treat hypocrisy, but he treated in book two emotions, or which kind of emotion must arise rhetorician in order, and how he should do it. And this part is very important for classical tradition as well as art. So this affect theory was quite in all branches of arts till Romanticism. And it is, of course, greatly indebted to Aristotle's understanding of rhetoric, and as well his poetics, which also is strongly associated with rhetoric, and not only in the part of emotions. As we know, the main objective of tragedy is to reach dramatic effect, which is nothing else than eleos and phobos, or fear and sympathy, which must be transformed, transmitted in audience, or must be arisen in audience. But what was the importance of rhetorical delivery? I would say this importance was viewed as the most important, and as suggests Quintilian and along with Cicero, when, of course, it's also anecdote, Demosthenes being asked what is the first and most important in a whole speech, he gave his palm to rhetorical delivery, to hypocrisy. And he again gave the second and third places to it, until those who asked him stopped asking him. And as it seems, it was not just the first, but as the only. Because as text states, that good delivery must fulfill the gaps of the first four parts, while the opposite cannot take place. If delivery is poor, it cannot be fulfilled by any or all the first four parts. And as concludes Cicero in his orator, that is why Demosthenes studied as the actor of Andronicus. No? This is the name of actor to whom studies differs according to source. So this delivery was not important only for rhetoric, but also for fine art, because in modern periods, for example, Poussin or even Rubens extensively studied the statues and paintings of rhetoricians, and this canon of fine arts, how should be depicted the figure, it's well known, contra posto or contra postura in Latin, was borrowed from rhetorical delivery. And many treatises concern both rhetorical delivery along with stage acting. One of such, which is also placed in the internet, is Gilbert Ostie's Chironomia, or the art of hand gesticulation, which is rather for sacral oratory, for preaching. And it is written in 19th century, when we witness the decline of records, the historical tradition, because of Romanism.
Thank you very much for this interesting answer. Since we discussed all parts of classical rhetoric and its significance in antiquity, what can you tell us about rhetorical tradition in the Middle Ages? Were there any different features or peculiarity of the discipline in the Middle Ages?
Since I mentioned classical oratory, I also must mention about medieval genre, that despite of the decline of rhetoric in the 12th century, we must also recall that rhetoric was divided in Middle Ages in two important genres. One was Ars Praedicandi, or art of thematical teaching, which was for sacral oratory, concerning Gilbert Hosting, and the other, the art of writing letters, or art dictamen. Also, we must mention two other branches, which was strongly associated in Middle Ages with rhetorical tradition, ars poetria, or verse composing, along with metrics and art of versification, and also ars notaria, how to compose legal documents. It is quite difficult to say what, or rather to say strictly, what was the fate of rhetoric in the Middle Ages, because we don't have uniform picture. It depends on periods, on schools, traditions, universities, but nonetheless, many scholars mention the decline of rhetoric in the 12th century, particularly in Paris University. But as I have already mentioned, one of the great humanists, Poggio Bracciolini's obsession to discover antique texts was rewarded by great finding in St. Gallen, Biblioteca St. Gallen, which was in North Swiss. He was sent by Pope for a certain diplomatic mission, and he was obsessed to rediscover antique texts. Among some other texts, important, very important texts, he found Quintilianus' full text of Institutio Oratoria, or Handbook of Rhetoric, or Handbook for Orator, public speaker. And this finding was met with great celebration by humanists. Poggio Bracciolini immediately did copy, which according to him took exactly 54 days. And it happened in 1416, at the very beginning of the 15th century. This matter also, 5 years later, 1421, Juan Landriani found the missing Icarus text on rhetoric. And this instigated and encouraged the humanists to be interested, extremely interested in rhetoric. So, another birth of rhetoric is associated, I would suppose, rather from Renaissance than Middle Ages. Also, we know it is a commonplace that Middle Ages cultural foundation was established on Septem Artes Liberales, trivium and quadrivium, or quadruvium, as poets used to say. And trivium consists of grammar, rhetoric, and dialectic, or logic. Or, firstly, dialectic, and then logic. But, in fact, the Renaissance is the new rebirth of rhetoric. If we have had we time, I would continue speaking about modern time and romantic period, which was the main cause of decline of rhetoric and the fate of rhetoric in 20th century. But I doubt that it might be as interesting for your audience as the history of medieval and antique periods.
Thank you very much for your answer. Yes, I believe for our audience, no less interesting would be rhetoric in the medieval universities and education in general. What could be said about the art of rhetoric in the medieval institution? How was it taught and how was it applied by students and university masters?
Unfortunately, I am not a specialist of medieval universities, and I'm afraid that I can be competent in the issue. I can speak about the medieval universities in so far they concerned rhetoric. And as far as I can judge, the issue of universities is quite ambiguous, at least at their origin and beginning of the university tradition. Firstly, must be distinguished two issues. When the universities originated. In fact, nobody knows exactly. For example, the oldest university is regarded University of Bologna, which is contended that the date of its origin is 1088. But this date is very conventional, invented in the 19th century by Carducci, and it was associated with La Grande Duchessa Matilda of Toscan or Canossa, who granted one of the specialists, Irnerius, with Latin classical legal documents, Corpus Juris Civilis, which was the main issue which instigated this intellectual and scholarly attitude to the law. But it was not, or it hardly can be regarded as universitas of this state, 1088, because universitas, firstly, meant certain corporation, which was established under the oath and which had certain autonomy to deliver the right to deliver the census of education, as it was later called, licentia ubique docendi, or jus ubique docendi, and nobody can intervene. But besides, it has other privileges as corporation. For example, the members of the corporation could not be judged by common courts, that they could be only disposed to the papal jurisdiction and could be judged by clergy or church courts. One of the reasons of the rebellion of Paris University, if I'm correct, in 1229 was the case that five students were executed by the civil authorities. which caused the protest of Paris University, since they could be judged only by the courts, by the church courts, and not by the civil courts. So the first difficulty is when university originates. Nobody can say, because it was seedy process. Secondly, when we speak about certain intellectual matters, we must distinguish, was it taught in university or was it circulated in the milieu of university? For example, we are quite informed that, for example, Roger Bacon and his master Grosseteste used to work on optica, but optics never was delivered, to the best of my knowledge, in university's syllabus or curriculum. It was, of course, studied, researched in university, but not delivered, as well as the so-called Merton School of Oxford, that some scholars, if I remember Schweinhead, researched the mathematical apparatus for describing motion, evenly accelerated motion. And it was great invention, but it was only in the milieu of university, but not taught in university. The same can be said on rhetoric and depending on university, as far as I can judge. For example, as we mentioned, in the Paris universities, since the stress was put on theology, Paris University focus was theology, not law, unlike Bologna University. It was in syllabus of 12-15, just facultative subject, usually taught at vocations when many students would not attend, and slightly as the, if I remember, 1268, if I'm correct, it was something who dropped out. Certainly, many issues of rhetoric was taught along with logic, dialect. But the discipline itself, we can say that at the beginning and at the half past 12th century was completely dropped out from the syllabus. Certainly does not mean that this approach was universal. There were intellectuals which regarded rhetoric highly. For example, Pierre of Chartres, who among the trivium regarded rhetoric as the most important art discipline. We also have mentioned Bonaventura, who regarded rhetoric as indispensable from theology. But some scholars regard it, Paul Pedersen, that the reason for declining rhetoric in Paris University was theology. I don't think that this idea is worth of sharing. Maybe some other reasons hardly can be associated with theology and decline of that. But in Bologna University, the situation was quite different, if not to say opposite. Since, as scholars tend to explain, the focus of Bologna University was first on civil law and then, of course, canon law, which in fact was not so much, or at least important at all, in Paris University until the 14th century. Interesting to remark that Bologna University, which estimated highly the art of rhetoric, also had certain problems. It was not in that manner that everybody praised and everybody eagerly studied masters and yes, excuse, I forgot to mention that in the case of Paris University, only masters, according to syllabus 12-15, was obliged to know one book on record, which is, of course, not impressive at all. So, returning to Bologna, it seems that there was also problems concerning rhetoric and discipline, and this is associated with one of the great rhetoricians, whom some scholars adhere to call as Buffon of rhetoric, Bon Compagno da or di Sing. This industrious rhetor, delivered in 1215. Bon Compagno da Sina delivered the lecture on Rhetorica Antiqua, and he also promised that he would compose Rhetorica Novissima. He also delivered this lecture in Padua University, and it seems that he composed Rhetorica Novissima in 1235, if I'm correct, and he delivered this his invention again at Bologna in the cathedral, which was offered by civil authority to Bologna University, and legate of Pope was presented at this lecture. What is important that in his preface he tried to justify the reason why he composed new work on rhetoric. And he stated that, firstly, the ancient rhetorics consisted solely of precepts, without doctrine or utility. Secondly, he contends that students, law students, both civil and canon law students, cannot succeed in law without a solid foundation in liberal arts, and among them, rhetoric. And thirdly, what is important to trace the condition of rhetoric, even in Bologna University, is that he regards his rhetoric as void, according to students of law, because it was not read as ordinary course, as other courses, but run through and taught like as a mechanical art. We know that in Middle Ages, mechanical art was quite derogatory and very superficial. So he justified that of these reasons, considerations, must be invented new rhetoric or novissima, the newest rhetoric, which he dedicated to much trial, time and strife. But, as we mentioned, from Renaissance period, the attitudes, particularly these great discoveries of the beginning 15th century, 1416 and 1421, the attitude toward rhetoric was dramatically changed. I don't know if my answer was satisfactory, but I hope that more or less I deliver some general information about the fate of rhetoric in the medieval university. Of course, two universities Harvard, the medieval university, but regarded as the oldest and the most prominent university.
Yes, it was completely satisfactory and extremely informative and interesting. Thank you very much for sharing information about this fascinating discipline, at least for the specialist of Middle Ages.
Yes, I suppose that it would, I not suppose, I hope that it might be somehow useful and interesting to both for the specialist of the Middle Ages.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening and inviting.
Thank you for coming and answering my questions.